Without anything further, I give you Kevin Orr from The Choice in Canonsburg, PA.
All right, Kevin.
I'm an addict. My name's Kevin.
Kevin.
I'm honored to be here. It was very strange. I found myself sitting here in this room a week ago, a couple of days ago. This was not part of my plan to be sitting here. I'm definitely glad to be here at this history conference. Bonnie. Hi. We planned on coming here. I was going to take the whole day off work. I didn't realize it didn't start till like later on in the afternoon, but that's kind of how my brain works. When Danny told me about this maybe in, I don't know, the springtime, right away I started planning my time to be here. So I got a call on Wednesday night and says, hey, listen, it's like this. We think we planned a little bit off, our plans a little bit off. We weren't going to start any activities of this history conference until 7. We decided we should have a meeting at 5. Would you be willing to share for us? I mean, and honestly, I learned a long time ago in Narcotics Anonymous what was taught to me by my predecessors and my sponsor and some of the guys in this room to help me get clean. You know, with that, whenever we're asked to do something for the fellowship, you know, unless we absolutely can't do it, it's an honor, and that's how we treat it. And so, you know, that's why I'm sitting here now. I kind of went back and forth about how to what to do with this, is share my message. You know, this isn't a regular NA meeting; it's something other than that. It's a history conference. I figured Danny said something about sharing about why we're here, like why I'm here. And so that's kind of just the framework I have. You know, really, I'm honored to be asked to do this, even though it's short notice, and I'm really glad and honored that the home groups that decided to hold this history conference are doing so. I really take my hats off to you guys. I'm guessing that some of you guys that are sitting back there, thank you very much for your willingness to put this together. I was very jealous last year when the history conference occurred up in Connecticut, and I couldn't go. I'm someone that, as a member of Narcotics Anonymous, very, very interested in where we came from, how we got to be where we're at, and, you know, those kinds of topics. So that's what it is. And, you know, lately here in the last, probably about the last year or so of my life, I've really been blessed and been given a lot of opportunities by the God of my understanding, and I've been having these moments that feel a whole lot like when I got clean, where there's coincidences that start to happen, and it's almost like there's too many coincidences for them to be coincidences. And there's activities and there's action going on in my life, in recovery, out of recovery, in my relationships professionally, with my recovery friend, like in all kind of aspects of my life, where just some things are happening, and I feel a real strong connection with my God, and that I'm on this journey that's being charted out in some new directions in my life. And so I got to believe that this is part of that. You know, just this week on Monday, I found myself in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. You know, again, I had no idea I'd be sharing here on Friday until Wednesday night, and I was in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania to help out a sponsee that was going through a situation, needed some help, and was afraid to go back to his hometown. The last time he was there, he used, and he has over a year clean, and he's scared to go back there. And so I took a day off work and took him to see his probation officer and do his business. We went to see his family, and there I am on Franklin Avenue in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. Haven't been there for years, and I'm right driving past the steps of the old double bubble meeting place that I used to go to years and years ago. It's no longer; it's in another location. There I am on Franklin Avenue, across from where the place where I met an addict named Bo S., who I really hope I see this weekend, at a dance, and he took me across the street to his studio and his apartment, and I got to meet him. And, you know, and if you know Bo, you know, Bo's quite a memorable person. That first night, and I'm a talker, and I don't think I got two words in edgewise, you know. And there I was at those places, this very same week that I end up getting asked to come here and share about why we're here. So I just feel like there's you know, things at work that are beyond me and beyond my control. Just to give you a little framework, I got clean in January the 7th, 1990 is my first day clean, my anniversary. The last time I used was on the 6th. And I've been a blessed addict. For me and for any of us, as those of us that are living this dream and this miracle in the room know, for us to stay clean and maintain recovery for a day, a week, a month is a miracle. You know, I used to say, I remember when I came back in, and I had been in and out a couple of times. I was on the multiple white key tag plan. And When I came back, and I remember saying to someone, you know, well, I only have 30 days. I only have 60 days. And I remember some addict grabbed me saying, don't you ever say that you only have. When's the last time that you sat and waited 60 days to cop some dope? You know, and honestly, I never did wait that long. You know, so I'm just very grateful, and I've had such a blessed, you know, past 21 and a half or so years of life, and my life's been so full of ups and downs, triumphs, tribulations, of experienced the promise that you told me I would when I came here, and which is freedom from active addiction. You know, that promise of freedom that you know, that little boy that 8 years old, you know, took his first, you know, stab at getting relief through using a substance, and found relief in using a substance, and liked that relief, and chased that relief until the moment I surrendered on January the 6th of 1990. You know, the fact that person can sit here today with the history that I have built in my life in the last 21 and a half years is nothing short of a miracle. Why me? You know, why us? Because I know so many people that have not made it. They're not in this room. You know, I sat looking through some pictures, you know, in the last, like, when Dan asked me, I'm like, what am I going to fucking do? You know what I mean? Listen, I'm a talker. Anybody knows me knows I can put some time in on a tape or whatever and fill in a slot. You know, I might bullshit you, which is why John came today to make sure that I wouldn't do that. You know, because he knows me too well, and Ron and just a couple guys that know me my whole life, it seems like. But as I looked at pictures and just being out in the hall and talking to Jimmy, who I haven't seen in probably 15, 20 years, and you know, the people that aren't here, man, why am I still here? Why is it that those of us that are in it? And when I saw the clean time list, a lot of people with some time clean, you know, in this room, and we've all felt that loss of loving another member of this program. Some of it maybe even a family member, and we lose them. You know, sometimes we lose them long before they pass away, and that's hard living that life. And many of us have been there. So I'm just grateful to have my seat here, sitting here 2011. You know, I showed up here a punk kid, 18 years old. You know, the first time I came in, I was 15 years old. I was too young to be an addict. You know, it was nice that you all had this place to come to. I wished you the best of luck, but I really didn't need you. You know, it wasn't for me. And I went right back out the door. And those things that I never had done when I went in and came into recovery the first time, they start getting scratched off the list, you know. And it's just, it's so, you know, so fortunate to be here. And again, you know, I don't know, do I share my story? So I just went with this whole thing, like, why are we here? Why am I here? And so I'm sitting here, just turned 40 years old. You don't have to clap or nothing for that, you know. Hey, listen, man, like for me and these people, you guys are a little bit older than me, I mean, stuff starts hurting, knees start, you know, creaking a little bit. You know, I learned a new word in the last 4 years called gout. You know, I thought somebody ran over my foot with a car. You know, things like that happen, and I don't necessarily take the best care of myself, which is something I need to work on. But, you know, how is it that someone 40 years old knows something about Narcotics Anonymous history? Two words, obsession and compulsion. You know, you all told me when I came here 15 and didn't belong and I left, and I came back here 16, 17, and, you know, when I finally surrendered, and it took for me being in some real ugly scenes before I was willing to believe you. So you tried to tell me when I came the first couple times, Kevin, you'll have to live that way. Oh, you don't understand. My friends are different than your friends, and if I get as bad as you, I'll come back, and this and that, and so on and so forth. And every time I went out, it would get bad. It would get worse. You know, I, you know, first time, hadn't seen the back of a police car. You know, by the time I sit here now, I had seen the back of a police car. Not that I'm some hardcore criminal, because I'm not. I'm not very hard. My addiction is not very glamorous. I didn't have helicopters bringing me bales of dope. I didn't have people chasing me. I didn't have the mafia after me. I didn't, you know, there was no girls running on the beach coming to me because I had all the cocaine. And that's just not my story. You know, not very glamorous. I was a punk, you know, to be honest with you. But when I came back here and I did surrender, finally, it was ugly. There was the kid was throwing up blood, and he was beat up, and I stole his money, and we had his mom's car, and, you know, it was in an alley, and I sat there, and a moment of surrender, I thought, I don't want to live this way anymore, you know. And so what I did was when I came back, y'all told me, chase this like you chased the dope. Chase this like you chased your addiction. You chase recovery. So there I go. I got it. The message was clear. You know, for whatever reason, it hit me, you hit me, you got through. The thick head that I carry around, it worked. So I chased it like I chased addiction. And, you know, and these guys that were with me back then, they remember, you know, I was going to NA, other A's, CA, this, that. I'd have went to AAA if you told me to go there. You know, I remember John always talking about being willing to, like, stand on your head in the corner. You know, that's a little bit extreme. I'm not going to say I'd stand on my head in the corner, but I would put gasoline on a credit card. I had no money, you know, and go to meetings and go to the, I would, you know, I've done some crazy things, you know, chasing this recovery program, but maybe you might come out as I talk. So how does someone like me end up knowing anything about any history? And, you know, when I was going through this, I found this letter. It's a copy of a letter that I wrote to another member of Narcotics Anonymous back on January the 25th of 1994. It's not very long, and I thought I would just share it because it's kind of part of my story, and it's kind of part of how I think, you know, Dan and the committee asked me to come here and talk about this, why are we here business. And then maybe this is sort of like an appetizer for the things that are going to happen here this weekend. Hey, I got to tell you, is Dan, the other Dan in here, Dan from Danny M? Good Lord, I saw the Smithsonian Institute of Narcotics Anonymous when I walked in here. You know, that's, I mean, I had a vision one day of having some stuff like that, and it just didn't go down that way. And, like, Ron knows me, he says, hey, this shit's bolted down because you're here, you know. So I think there's a cameras in there. I don't know. I heard there might be. Better watch myself. This is the letter I wrote to an addict named Greg Pierce, who's no longer with us. Dear Greg, I'm an addict and my name is Kevin. You may not remember me, but we met in Columbus, Ohio back in December of 1990, where I attended a History of NA workshop. We talked for about 30 minutes the following day, and you left quite an impression with me. Not to make you feel old or anything, but I was astounded to meet someone who had been clean longer than I'd been alive. I actually haven't really read this whole thing since I pulled it out the other night. Arrogant little bastard, I was. I believe your clean date was sometime in 1970, and I was born July 29, 1971. Nothing like rubbing it in, I guess. I was especially overwhelmed with your knowledge of NA history. We also met in February of 1991 at the Mid-Atlantic Car Workshop. I believe you were there for a meeting of the trustees. In fact, we sat at the same table for the Saturday night banquet, and there's a couple guys who have been sitting with me that same night. I'm not 22 years old, and a little over 4 years clean, and have become extremely interested in the history of the fellowship that has saved my life. When this need for knowledge struck me, right away I thought of you, and I dug out those tapes from that convention in Columbus. I also acquired a tape of a history workshop you did in Allentown in 1989, and a copy of the 20th anniversary tape from 1973. I'm from southwestern Pennsylvania, tri-state region, and in my travels I've come to know Bo Sewell. He has put me in contact with some of the history work an addict named Carl from Michigan has put together. This material was nice and all, but I remembered all of the copies of authentic documents and hard copies of significant material that you had at that workshop in Columbus. So I took notes from the tapes of the citations you gave, like from the Saturday Evening Post 1954, two New York Times articles, one article from May of 1951, Time Magazine. May 7th of this year, I will graduate from California University of Pennsylvania with a bachelor's degree in sociology, so I've become quite familiar with library research. I went to the library at my college as well as the University of Pittsburgh Library to obtain some of those documents that you cited and make some photocopies of the ones I mentioned. That material has led me to other things, like a book about the Lexington Hospital and a book titled The Addict, and some other things. I spent much time in libraries, as I mentioned, with several other public libraries over the last few months. I've come across some pretty interesting things like first and second edition AA Big Books, a published article by a man named Mark Pyrot from 1985 titled The History and Structure of Narcotics Anonymous. But I still have a thirst for knowledge, for more knowledge about NA history. I find the pre-NA history pretty interesting, especially the events that came out of the Lexington Public Health Service Hospital. An interesting tidbit that I ran across concerning Lexington and Fort Worth hospitals is that the federal legislation that brought them about came from a bill introduced by a man from my backyard, Representative Stephen Porter from Pittsburgh in 1928. Many things like this have become pieces in this puzzle of understanding our past that I'm wrestling with. How dramatic. Anyway, I've decided to write you to see if you can help me in my quest for information. You know, I could have just asked the guy to give me some papers, you know. I'm hoping that you would possibly turn me on to some more periodical citations, or maybe direct me to a way I can get my hands on a copy of The Key, which is a newsletter from the Public Health Service Hospital. Most of you know, some of you may not, or whatever. Any help will be greatly appreciated. Enclosed is a couple of dollars in case you decide that you can help me and need to photocopy anything. Like, I've given them any ideas. Like, give me some fucking paper. Give me some stuff, you know. If not, put it in the basket or whatever. No control issues there. I just really want to study any history could use some help. Thank you. Yours in recovery, Kevin Rice. And I'll leave my address there. And that just kind of maybe gives you a little framework or understanding of like where I was at and maybe you know part of my journey in this program and how you know someone like me from Charleroi, Pennsylvania, you know, that grew up scratching around to get high at the pool hall between 5th and 6th Street and the alley behind there and who drank beer on the riverbanks of the Monongahela, you know, so how does someone like me have any you know, any relevance to a topic or an event related to NA history, obsession and compulsion. Once I got that fixed idea, you know, that I was going to chase this thing like I chased my dope, I really took that to heart. You know, I did things like where I met Jimmy at was at the campvention. I had about 6 months clean. I just went to anything and everything that I could, you know, to learn more about Narcotics Anonymous. And it wasn't until I had about 5 months clean that I decided that Narcotics Anonymous was my home. You know, like I said earlier, I had bounced around other fellowships, read other books, and went to this and that, people preyed on me, and whatever. You know, I tried all that stuff, and my first Narcotics Anonymous kind of like large-scale event was the retreat, spiritual retreat, just a few miles up the mountain here in Farmington. And at that event, that Saturday night in particular, I felt a power and a force in that room that I still connect with and is still part of how I believe and understand, you know, the God of my understanding to be. And I got chills in my face. The fact that all these addicts can get together and not stab each other, not rob each other, nobody got shot, you know, nobody slumped over, nobody seized on us, you know, the fact that that was, and it was just blew me away. And from that point on, I've only recovered in Narcotics Anonymous. I became at the time what I now know some people in the room were back in the mid to late 70s, you know, NA purists, you know, instead of learning words like that. We called ourselves Rangers. Or they called us Rangers, I don't know. You know, I was always very tactful whenever somebody would say that they're an alcoholic and an addict in a meeting on Wednesday nights at my home group of California PA. You know, might come around to be my turn to share, and I might say, you know, this is Narcotics Anonymous, and we recover from addiction here. I'm not saying anything, it might mean to anybody, or, you know. But, you know, the arrogance of youth and of being early in recovery and of not having worked, you know, any steps yet, you know, and crazy things. So that's how this kind of started for me, you know. And when Danny told me they're having this history, I was just so taken back, like, wow. You know, I have a lot of history right in this area. I mean, I used not far from here, and my early jaunts at recovery were right around here. You know, and you know, Narcotics, but what I, you know, I kind of feel like in some ways, like I have a little bit of Forrest Gump in me, you know? You know, like, you remember Forrest Gump, not to promote any outside entities or anything like that, but, you know, like he'd appear, like, in the picture with, you know, President Kennedy, and he was, like, always where there were significant things happen. I had no idea who Greg P. was whenever I met him, truthfully. You know, I go to a convention, a guy named Donnie I., who's, you know, still part of my weed. He's just coming to meetings. I saw him last Friday night. And he said, hey, let's go to a convention. And I said, okay. You know, I'm hip to recovery. And he says, we're going to Columbus, Ohio. I said, well, Don, you understand, I'm not working. At that point, I was a freshman in college, didn't have a lot of money, you know. He said, listen, if you know Donnie, some people might know Donnie. He'd be like, listen, brother, you come with me, you have a little bit of food money, for you, maybe a little more food money. He says, but I got the driving, I got the hotel. Hell, you're still a newcomer. Get a newcomer package, and it's all good. So I do that, and so we get there, and I'm fueled, you know. And we get to Columbus, and you know we're at the hotel, and Donnie's like, hey man, I'm watching the Steelers. The Steelers are on Sunday night football or Monday night, whatever the hell. Hey, I'm 18 years old, man. I got some energy. I got. What are we doing? Where's the dance? Where's the girls? Where's something going on? And I like go into this big ballroom, and I'm like, I'm here, you know. And there's this really big guy with this gray beard and this crazy long hair, sitting up at a table like this with all this shit that he had spread all over the place. And I'm like, there was no dance, there was no girls. Well, there was girls, you know, but there was no, it wasn't what I was looking for, you know. But it was like the only thing going on at the convention that night. So I sat down, you know, and wow, what an experience to hear, you know, one of our predecessors, and by some accounts, and throughout this next couple of days, you know, and I like to think of whatever I'm going to talk about is going to be a little bit of an appetizer, because I see what's on the agenda, and I know what, but I just peeked into Danny's room and started drooling, and I see people like Bonnie here and Jim, and I know that the things that are going to be shared here in the next couple of days are going to be very revealing, and I'm looking forward to hearing some of these very personal stories about things like how our basic text came to be. You know, I was in diapers when y'all were writing that, or I was getting my nose wiped by my mom, you know. So I can't share with you about how that happened, but some of you in this room know how that happened, and I can't wait to hear about that. And those are the things that Greg was talking about that night. And he was telling these stories, you know, and he was talking about, and he's such a humble person, you know, he didn't position himself, and people told me afterwards, did you know who that is? N.A. Tree and this and that. I'm like, what the hell is an N.A. Tree, you know? And at that time, I knew about twigs, you know. They had the tree, and they broke it apart and made twigs out of it, and then they have some other thing with arrows they're trying to shove up our... Never mind. Arrow here, and this, and if you go that way, then this way, and it's the new service, and it's going to be wonderful, and no more area service, and there's... I don't know. We'll hear a lot about that in the hallways, and maybe even from the podiums this weekend, but... You know, probably the best way to understand our future is to understand our past in some regards, you know. So there it is. I meet this guy. I didn't really meet him. You know, I taught, I heard, and all I knew is that he was important. You know, I referred to meeting him in the hallway the next day or so, and it was about a half hour. I just knew that was me, man. I wanted to be where the action was, you know. And so there's the guy that had all the stuff, and, you know, I wanted to take stuff off of him, but he wasn't giving it away. He could just let you touch it or look at it or whatever, but... I just knew that my impression of what happened, what occurred there was that this was someone that was very significant to Narcotics Anonymous, and I truly know that to be true today. So I go on to my recovery business, and I do this and that, and next thing you know, we at my home group, we decided to host an H&I meeting Wednesday nights, and nobody from H&I showed up, you know. So there was two addicts there. One's name was Lance, and one's name was Cheryl. And we knew that they knew something about H&I. And so we decided they were going to have the workshop for us because we wanted to have an H&I. We had advertised, for God's sakes, you know. And from that H&I workshop, at 6 months, we decided to create an area. You know, it made sense. you know, since the area, that's, I think, how, you know, they talk about resentments. I mean, the area didn't send H&I people to have a workshop, so F them. We're going to have our own area now, you know. And we created what was called the Mon Valley area with a resentment and a coffee pot, you know. We had an area service committee in a town called Charleroi where, at the time, there was no Narcotics Anonymous meetings, you know. That was a place we can get free, you know, very cheap rent at the library, the basement of the library. You know, I said about being like Forrest Gump, I had no idea getting clean, coming in around 87, 88, 89, N.A. was such a young fellowship. See, I'm such a self-centered, egotistical person that when I got my first basic text handed to me, it was a third edition revised. I didn't know what none of that meant, you know. But I assumed that N.A. was always how it was when I got here, you know. I didn't realize that just 10 years or so prior, there was no N.A. in the Pittsburgh area. You know, our first meeting that's documented, and there could be disputes. And that's one thing I know about the history. There's always disputes about how things went down. But our first meeting started in 1978. So in 1987, N.A. was less than 10 years old in the Pittsburgh area. You know, I go to treatment. All I know is they hand me a meeting list. They hand me a book. And, you know, I assumed it was always that big. I didn't know. I didn't know that book. I didn't know that there was, like, spiritual knife fights going on over that book at the time that I got, you know, trying to get clean. You know, that there was... And I didn't understand until later, you know, and I think, again, I spent a lot of time with Bo in the mid-90s, and so I feel like I have at least some handle of one perspective on how things worked with that book. But I didn't know that, like, when I was born in the early 70s, there was, like, basically a couple of NA meetings in the world that were known about, and then there was different things. And so what Greg talked about, and it got my attention, was things like, and I'm going to bounce around here, and I may do a little show and tell. I'm not going to do like a watermelon and a hammer. Don't worry, you know, if you're sitting up front there. Little props, but nothing crazy. And I was told to keep it 20 minutes, but listen, man, I'm already off that chart. So you know, just what got my attention was, it says in our basic text, everybody knows, well, I don't have a 6th edition. Well, I kind of have a 6th edition. I downloaded it for free, which I don't know if they're going to come looking for me and ask me for money, but it worked, and I got a 6th edition. I don't know what all it says in there because I haven't really read a 6th edition. But in, you know, the 5th edition talks about NA starting in 1953. You know, and when I went back and listened to Greg's tapes and I started taking all these notes, because like I said, I went to college, I knew how to take notes, you know. He was talking about, you know, this hospital and this and Lexington, and it was confusing to me. So I go back, I listen, I look, and I find out, you know, there's things like, you know, in this book called The Addict by Dan Wakefield, you know, there's talk about Narcotics Anonymous. Father Egan is the chaplain of Narcotics Anonymous, patterned after Alcoholics Anonymous and founded in 1948. Well, the book says 53. This book says 1948. You know, there's citations, and I got articles in here from 1940, talking about 1947, some called Addicts Anonymous that started in this jail. I've got a picture of a guy with a big cigar in a meeting, and a lot of you know these things, and you know, I'm kind of mixing things up because there's probably newer people here that don't know some of these things. And if I could do anything through this little wire we hear kickoff meeting, it might be to sort of tease you a little bit and make you want to know more, because that's exactly what happened to me when I started getting this information. I wanted more, you know. N.A. Danny Carlson in you know, New York City in the 50s, there was an N.A. And again, picture the Saturday Evening Post. See, culturally back then, there was no internet, there was no CBS Evening News on TV. The Saturday Evening Post was a primary mode of you know, communicating information. Things like the New York Times, Saturday Evening Post, magazines, and those kinds of things. So, you know, this was significant to me. And again, why? I was a kid who was trying not to get high. If I was getting my nose in a goddamn book about 1954 in New York City, you know, I look back now, I was still crazy. If I didn't get that obsessed about stuff like this, I probably would have never made it. You know, I did just enough to you know, in recovery, just enough steps, work, just enough prayer to sit where I'm sitting. I don't know if I'd have done more or less. I just know that it's my journey, and this is where it brought me. And so I go there, and I get this book. And I, you know, again, the Forrest Gump thing, you know, anybody see one of these before? Am I allowed to hold it up here, Dan? This, I don't know. Man, if I get to the hotel, it's not an NA meeting, kind of. But,
Can you show off what is it, Target?
What's that? The Target. Well, a lot of times, let's go back here, you know. I'm a school administrator, so I usually get those right here, which is another crazy story that somebody like me can be there. But, hey, I have a few months clean. I'm down at the Manessen Today group, you know, which is still in existence, one of the oldest meetings in the tri-state region. And some guy named Jim H. hands me this book. And I'm like, wow, it's free. First of all, that's my price, you know. And this is a Forrest Gump moment for me, because I had no idea the significance of what this is. Now, I'd be lying if I stood here and told you that this is the one that Jim handed me, you know, because as the story goes, and the guy's in the room, he's like, hey, Kev, you shouldn't have that thing. You know, we heard about that. So there's something in the NA way, or your word's out there. There's some big shit going on with that thing. You know, you better get rid of it. I did. I threw it in the garbage can, you know, because I didn't know any different. Only a little bit later did I realize what this was. And, you know, my old friend Bo, when I became acquainted with him, he took care of me. He had a box of these sitting around. I'm not telling stories out of tail and he'd get mad at me, but, you know. He's had targets on his front, back, and side, and every other place. But so he gave me this sometime later when I shared my story about how I threw mine away. But what the hell was this? You know, and hey, listen, I'm a sick addict. I love bullshit. I love arguing, and you know what I mean. We start that area. Actually, you know, the way that it came across, you know, I kind of took credit for starting the area. Happened. You know, I show up at a tri-state regional meeting, Southside Hospital. Mickey probably remembers when they were down there. You know, I remember, who was the chair? It might have been Sean. Could have been Sean S. Might have been the chair. I know there was Sean, Roz, different people that were down there at the time, Shannon, you know, and they said, hey, you know, is there any new, what's like new, I don't remember exactly, I'd be lying if I made up, but I remember said, hey, yeah, I started an area, we're here to be seated or something like that. You know, and my dear friend Keith, God rest his soul, he died with dignity as a member of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, with addiction-related illnesses. And he says, yeah, it's called the Kevna area, you know, because we have all these acronyms. And damn it, that name has stuck. It stood the test of time. There's still people that refer to me as Kevna, you know. And so, hey, listen, I'm a dope fiend, so I have an area. I find out, hey, the region pays for people to travel to conferences and service things. They give you mileage. I'm 19 years old, maybe 20 at this point. Hey, kid, come on, we're going to go to Marlikna. Marlik, what the hell? Okay, I'll go, you know. So I go, and wow, this is another Forrest Gump moment for me. I'm there, and it's the year, I think it's 91. That's when this thing is like hot. The lawsuit, there was a lawsuit against one of our members filed in federal court in Philadelphia in November of 1990, I think. There's people going to tell you all kind of facts about things like that this weekend. But there it was. I'm front and center. I'm at ground zero. And those of you that are in this room that may have been there, there's Stu and Becky from the board of the office. There's Mike, who was like the moderator guy, who was the RSR from Mid-Atlantic. He later became an event planner or something for the office. You know, and I remember John Thompson and just different people from like around New Jersey, New York, and what's that guy's name? Mitch with the long curly hair. He sold air. That's all I know. He owned airspace above New York City and sold air, whatever his name was. And everybody was chanting. They wanted Dave to go up on stage so he could tell his side of this lawsuit story. And there I was like Forrest Gump, right in the middle of all this. I had no idea. I didn't go there knowing that was going to happen, you know. And what a kind of privilege I could see, looking back now, 20-some years later, I've been around this program, that I had a front row seat to these kinds of events, these very significant things that happened in our fellowship, you know. That night we sat at the banquet table, you know, we end up sitting by Greg. I don't remember how it happened, I honestly don't. I might have fiended my way there, because remember I said I knew this guy was important, I probably shoved my way to that table. Maybe not, you know, maybe Paul S. was with us, maybe he sat us there. But, you know, so there it goes, and I could just go on and on, you know. I go to, you know, and I became, at some point later, I became obsessed by NA, you know, and thank God I did, because I'm still clean. You know, I'm still clean. My parents lived from 1990, January, till the day that both of them died individually. My dad died almost 2 years ago, my mom about 6 years ago. They both lived the rest of their life without wondering, where's he at? Why'd he take the money? Why'd he wreck the car? Is he okay? You know, they were able to live their life that way because of NA, because they got so obsessed about it. And so, I could show you my credit score from back in I'm in college, they give you credit cards, you don't got a job. It didn't make any sense, but I signed up for as many as I could. What I do with those credit cards? I'm going to Chicago to the World Convention, I'm in Baltimore, I'm on the rooftop of a hotel with hors d'oeuvres, with money I didn't own, you know? That sounds like an addict. I don't know about anybody else, but that's part of my journey. And, you know, and I was embarrassed to look. Like, now that I've actually gone somewhere in life, I can look back and think, gee, I was getting, like, you know, charge offs for like $150. Like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe that. But back then, I didn't have it, you know. I'm in Chicago. I get a hold of this. I didn't know what it was. It caught my eye. This is a newsletter called New Awakenings. And, you know, so I spent, and listen to me, you know, talk about obsession. I had to have NA stuff. Whatever money I took with me, I spent the last night at the convention on shirts and NA frisbees and sunglasses and shit and mugs. It was so bad that once I had ran out of money, I saw other items that I wanted more than the ones that I had already bought. So I'm trying to huck the items I already bought to get money to go back in and buy another shirt that I wanted more. That was like how crazy I was, you know. And the whole way home, those bastards, Steve and Wade and Desmond, they didn't give me any money to eat at the rest stops on Ohio Turnpike. You know, they let me suffer. You know, they didn't enable me. Male call ambassador, but, you know, they take you, you know, you made your bed, you got laying a kid, you know. Listen, we went to a hotel room because we heard there were shirts from Alaska. You know, it was on a bulletin board in the lobby. And we go out there, you knock on the door, you there? It was like a scene from Usin. You got it? We got it. There was a girl, scantily clad, laying on a bed, just like back in the day. Not my day, probably someone else's day. I heard that's what it was like. I don't know. Again, I told you I wasn't hard and I didn't have that fancy of a story, but the guys I was with told me that's how it was. And then they put the suitcase on the other bed, click, click. There was Alaskan NA shit, you know? Perfect. Like, that's where I was at with my obsession about this program. But again, thank God I was, because I'm still sitting here, you know, when many are not. Very blessed. So, there I go. New Awakenings. Man, did this fuel my fire. You know, I take all these pieces of information, still a little bit that I learned about the history, meeting people like Greg, Pierre. I don't think I met Bo yet at this point. You know, having a bit of a attitude myself and whatever, just a little bit of edge on me. And I read this, and me and Steve R. were at each other, going back and forth about this stuff, because he sees it one way, I see it another. The thing that still goes on to this day. I hope he doesn't hear this tape. You know? That's right. I heard that. I agree with that. Anyway, so I'm in the back reading this shit, and I'm reading it out loud. And they wouldn't turn off the goddamn Spin Doctors Pocketful Kryptonite CD long enough to listen to this over and over again the whole way back. Everybody has their own obsessions, and that was his that week. Identity crisis. You know, all these things about NA and the basic text and how it was written, and it just all started converging for me. You know, and I got a hold of this. That convention was in August or September of 93, and in December 93, I have an article published in the New Awakenings called The Voice of a Member. See, they were doing this thing with something called the 12 Concepts, and in my area of service, they started this thing about talking about full participation. What's that mean? Well, the trusted servant should have a vote. Well, they do have a vote at their home group. Don't they? I mean, I was a trusted servant. I voted my home group. Well, no, but they want to have their own vote. I mean, this is called, we're moving towards more, you know, and now what they call consensus-based decisions. What the, Jesus Christ, you know. It's like one of the things about NA that made me feel so much a part of, a person who hated himself from the time I was a little kid, was that I felt like I meant something. You know, we had a group conscience, and damn it, you know, we were haggling over $9 over, to buy a used coffee pot or whatever, but at least, you know, made me feel like I was, like, part of something. That, like, you know, at least I had a vote, opinion counted, something like that. And so when these kind of things started happening, I started opening, and I worked some steps and started looking at my life a little bit different. I got real passionate about it. You know, and the mission continued, and I became more obsessed and all this stuff and that, you know, and I started collecting things. I sit in there. You know, I got, you know, one of each edition, except the sixth edition, unless you count the digital version that I got, you know. I got, this is a great thing. You know, I remember the day came. I got a box from the World Service Office. I was like, I took it with great care. Held it, nurtured this box. My mother's like, "What the hell? What's in there?" You know. I said, "Listen, I've been waiting for this for a long time. This is a big moment in my life, Mom. You're crazy. I mean, here she's handing me money. I'm fucking up credit cards, and here I use one of my private credit cards. I have no money to pay for it, to buy shit from the world. It was my foreign literature. I now had literature in Dutch, German, Spanish." She's like, "Can you read any of that?" I said, "No." But I got it. I have the stuff. You know what I'm saying? And those of you in the room that are into this kind of thing know that. It was like I copped. You know? I was going to be the only addict I knew that had a German basic text. I'm probably the only addict I knew that cared to have a German basic text, looking back on it. You know? But that's just how it went down. And I go through. And then, you know, I was full speed ahead, you know, and I probably have, you know, something on the lines of what Danny has, but maybe nothing like that, but maybe a little more that direction, you know, because I had that obsession and I had that drive. I started making the connections and I was hanging out and I was going to places, and then I met a girl, and everything changed. And ain't the girl, me and my wife either, you know. It was when I had this turbulent period, and these guys, you know, this is part of John keeping me honest. I love to tell you a lot of flowery stuff about how wonderful things. Listen, I went down, I went deep, you know. And thank God I didn't use, but I did about every other thing crazy that you can do in that period of my life. truly lost myself for a stretch, you know. And I did like a lot of us do, where we do that with some people never come back. And again, I'm just so lucky to still be sitting here. And so that put the emergency brake on my obsession with NA memorabilia stuff. And it stopped a little bit after that, you know. But I went through, you know, listen, I have one of these. This, listen, ain't no one touching this, because I know some of you. And I know that you've seen eBay and see what this is worth, and I don't trust some of you, especially you. This was a gift by an addict. Can you believe that? A gift. I didn't have to buy this. I didn't have to go, hey, I'm not going to tell you everybody, but a friend of mine, actually, you know, it was in Philadelphia. He met someone somewhere in Philadelphia with a bag of money and got one of these. I don't know who it was. It might have been Danny, for all I know. We don't know each other that well yet, but, you know, that might have been how he afforded the rest of the collection. You want to talk about, like I said, I get this Forrest Gump moment in my life. An addict who had this, who saw in me the spark of desire to know more and thirst more for the Father. And this addict has subsequently drifted away from the program. Listen, unless I see you ingesting drugs or you tell me that you did, I'm not going to say that person's using, okay? Because that's not for me, you know. But I've heard that this person's not doing well. And just before they entered that part of their life where they weren't doing well, they gave this to me. And they told me, Kevin, I know I could trust this with you. I know you'll know what to do with this. And let me tell you, there's been, since this is when I had 10 years clean, it was an anniversary present. You know, there's been times where I had to wait for payday to buy something, and every once in a while the thought comes in my head. My wife's not in the program. She doesn't have an affinity for my NA memorabilia, so I got to hide this from her because she knows how to use Craigslist and eBay and shit, you know. But also, kidding aside, you know, that was like a gift, and it meant so much to me. And I can never sell this or part with this because of how I obtained it. You know, if I'd have found it in a used bookstore, so I might do that. I might go there. But this was like a gift, a spiritual gift, and is how I look at it, the way that this addict handed it to me. And so that's my story in my red book. I have one. I don't have a blue first, but I have a red first, and I treasure it, you know. And everybody that I know that has blue first, I always tell them, don't forget me in your will, because things happen, you know what I mean? Because I do want to have one of those one day. You know, I obtain things like, and those of you in the room know what this is. You know, we paid someone to write this. You know, I'll let the literature people talk about this tomorrow or later or whatever, you know. And it didn't work, you know, because, this guy, I find this kind of stuff in libraries. I think I got this out of a library, you know. A used bookstore, $2.95. Who knew that, you know. Maybe it's worth some money now. I would sell this, if anybody, you know. I mean, we could talk. Because, like, this wasn't a spiritual gift. I bought it for $2.95, you know. I'm not sure. I could just go in different directions. You know, I do want to share a couple of things before I finish up. You know, I got a whole, but I saw these are worth a little bit of money, you know. This was a book written by our old, this is like probably the non-addict that cared about the fellowship the most by some people's accounts. Other people disagree with that. Again, with the history thing, you're going to have people arguing. You know, I never met the guy. I was just, so excited to get more NA history shit, you know, to be honest with you. And, you know, there's a lot of great information in here. There's a lot of information here that's controversial, you know. But these are just some of the things I've collected over the years. You know, like I said, my collection kind of stopped. And then, you know, I went on this mad treasure hunt. I told you in the letter to Greg that I went through, and that's not too bad. It's 552. I went through and I took notes, and then I went to the library, first at Cal U where I went to college. And then, you know, their resources weren't as great. Then I went to the Hillman Library, University of Pittsburgh. Very good library, very easy to use. I started finding stuff in there. Those articles that I talked about, you know, federal probation from June of 1948. You know, it talks about Addicts Anonymous. Worthy of special mention is the great interest shown by a group of sincere patients developing an association in the hospital known as Addicts Anonymous. Patterned after the successful Alcoholics Anonymous, members of the latter organization from Lexington and Frankfurt developed the hospital chapter to the point where responsible leadership among the patients is available. That's scary if you think about that. You got a bunch of junkies in a hospital setting, and they're saying that there's responsible leadership in there. That's probably true. You know, secretary designated to handle affairs. first service. You know, Addicts Anonymous, from my understanding, and again, there may be new things I'll learn this weekend. First application of the 12 steps and 12 traditions to our problem, the disease of addiction. You know, truly, in very, very many ways, a predecessor to all of us. You know, there's bits and pieces you'll see and you'll hear over the next couple of days. Danny has all this stuff to make the connections. Danny, this is like the appetizer. You weren't here when I first started. You know, I consider this kind of like an appetizer. You know, the main course will be coming throughout the rest of the weekend. And like I said, the mother load's in that other room. I can't wait to go in there and really look at stuff. But, you know, these are the things that I did and I collected. You know, we were in Baltimore, Maryland in 1990. When was that, Ron? 94, 95, something like that. And I had learned about Jimmy A. I don't know if Jimmy's here or not. I only met Jimmy A. like once or twice, and he's supposed to be here this weekend. Well, they had this separate event a few miles out of town called the Alternative Service and Information Structure Work Group or something like that. And so we left the World Convention, some of us, and we went to that to check it out. Because by then, I'd already been a New Awakenings guy, and I was all hot on the trail to like learn all this stuff and see where the action was, you know. And it was neat. That night, you know, the Way of Life movement was already underway. You know, if you know Bo, he was carrying around those 3.5-inch discs everywhere he went, handing those discs out. You know, and he would say, hey, Kevin, here's the January update. Here's the this. This is back in, you know, the mid-90s. So the Way of Life had a hospitality suite put together down in Baltimore. And I networked with people, Carl D., who's no longer with us, you know, I think Jimmy informed me, a guy named Jeff from Rockford, Illinois. I was in Jeff's apartment or his house. First time I'd ever saw Red Book was out there. And where am I at? Again, I'm not at the dance. I was at Kinko's. Because some of these folks from the Way of Life group and the little network that I made, they had stuff for me. They had articles out of, you know, the Chicago Sun-Times from 1950. You know, they had some things that I couldn't get at the libraries that I was using. You know, they had a copy of, and I showed this to Danny earlier, I didn't have an actual copy of The Key, but it became like a puzzle to me. You know, when I heard Greg talk about our purpose was taken from The Key was a newsletter written by these addicts at that hospital. And it just all kind of started falling together. And, you know, again, that's really how my life's gone. You know, when I put myself out there and put the effort into it, whether it's recovery, whether it's been step work, relationships, parenting, helping my parents cope with their medical problems throughout the latter years of their lives, or understanding NA history. You know, like y'all told me when I got here, you show up, you do the footwork, and Ron would always tell me, Kev, you do the right things happen. You know, Greg would call that the law of reciprocity. And that's where I learned words like reciprocity. How's an addict know a word like that? You know, what comes around goes around. You reap what you sow. Listen, there was many years where I was what I consider to be a drive-by member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I got that emergency brake put on because I met that first girl I thought was going to be it for me, you know, that set forth a period of my life where I never left the fellowship. Always have had, you know, a place and time for, but it wasn't the priority that it needed to be for a number of years. And I was only cheating myself, and I was also cheating other people. You know, it's only been within the last year and a half where I found my way back to the center of the program, and it feels so good here. You know, how was it that I was able to go some years being on the outskirts? You know, at any point in time while I was doing that, you know, I'd have a home group for 6 months and then quit it, and then not join another one for half a year, then join one for a year, then I'd be secretary, then I'd quit secretary. You know, not being the kind of member, not really sponsoring people, not, you know, how I made it to this point, just a miracle. You know, but I am at this point, and I'm telling you, just I'm just going with it, you know, and that's part of like maybe why I ended up sitting here today with this. So I did that stuff, I got all the information, you know, and son of a bitch, I go out to the World Service Office for the first time in 1998, and they have this for sale. Mm-hmm. God did. It took me like all kind of blood, sweat, and tears to get a hold of stuff that, like, and I open it up and there's copies of the stuff that I thought I was the only one that knew about this, you know. And there's a picture of the Time article and the Saturday Evening Post. There's The Key and all this stuff, you know. It made me so damn mad. But I was like happy for people that, you know, a lot of people could now know about the history. But I was also mad because it made me not quite so special. You know what I mean? Like that you could just buy this book and you could end up with a lot of access to. And again, like everything else in our, if you've been in a home group and had to make a decision about who's chairing next month, who's what kind of food you're having at your anniversary. You know we don't always agree on things. You know we have disputes. Sometimes they get heated. You take that, multiply it by like, I don't know how much, and then you get the kind of controversy that we have over things like this and the literature and the service structure and all those things. As time's gone on for me, and I've been fortunate enough to be a part of some of the history of Narcotics Anonymous in my own backyard, I go back to something that I heard Greg Pierce talk about. He said, we all are living in a history. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that when we started that area service committee out of a resentment and some egos that, now I look back at that same town that at the time didn't have any meetings. They had had one prior to that to close a couple years before. It lasted like 6 months, that Thursday night meeting at Shawroy. But we had that area service. Now there's like, I don't know how many meetings that someone from Shawroy can tell me. There's a lot of meetings. There's recovery there. There's addicts or sponsor people staying clean. In a town where I used, where there was nothing but disease, there's not recovery. Did us having that area there, that area service committee, have anything to do with it? I don't know. But I know it happened, and I know at some point after that, all this other recovery popped up. We all have a chance, and NA history doesn't stop. NA history does not stop. I had the privilege. And this week, I'm telling you about the Forrest Gump moments and God working. Like, I was asked to share at Sunday night, this past Sunday, it's the anniversary for this. It's available to us all group. I learned how to read the basic text that's available to us all group. I was at the first meeting that they had 21 years ago. I didn't think of that at the time as being some relevant historical situation. But I found myself 21 years after I was showing up at that Thursday night meeting at 6 o'clock that's now on Sundays, I found myself being asked to share my recovery story for that group. These guys that have been around for, and ladies that have been around, I know for myself it's a testament, not that Kevin Rice is the most special person in Rewind. Not that I'm the most special person, that it's a testament to me that Narcotics Anonymous works. That an addict like me that didn't stick people up for millions of dollars and move money around the offshore accounts, I slithered around like the snake that I was across my parents' bedroom floor to steal money out of my mother's purse to go get something to get high. That an addict like me could sit here today and not have to use is a testament that Narcotics Anonymous works. And it works because of addicts like all of us that show up at a home group, that hug a newcomer, the people that were there for me. There was addicts. I'm no kind of like circuit speaker, but you feel that emotion coming on, you got to fight it. I don't know. I just go. And there's a guy sitting in the room. When I didn't believe in myself, he believed in me. I remember he said to me, hey, Kevin, why don't you come to college? I said, you don't know me, John. I can't go to college. That's not for me. That's for someone else. I'm not smart like you, No, really, I think you could do it, And I've been around you, and I know that you can do it, And I can sit here today, and I started college, and I almost flunked out. My friend had F, D, C, and I said, see, I told you this wasn't for me, No, you got to just hang in, And I can sit here today, I've got two master's degrees, I do real well. I'm not trying to brag. I'm just trying to tell you a little bit about my story and why I'm here. It's because addicts like John believed in me when I couldn't believe in myself. And that's how I suspect it's worked for all of us in this room, that we've all had some version of a story that addicts helped us, and that's really our history. There's a lot of stuff I could say. I got shit I could show you. I got pictures of people. I got pictures of me and Bo and me and Oscar and me and Ivan, the H&I chair. I remember World H&I chair. I was like, I wanted his autograph or something like that. I thought it was like, famous. I got a picture of a dear, dear soul named Bob B., who a lot of you know who Bob B is, and some of you may not. He signed my basic text. My basic text. Not the one that I collect, but the one that I recover with. The one they gave me when I showed up at rehab in 87, and I didn't really have any idea what it meant to have a third edition revised. It was just the book that they gave me, and they probably charged my insurance company $300 for it, But Bob signed my basic text, and I opened up to, I found the only NA meeting in the world, and I remember the moment that I met Bob and that he hugged me. And I know he's still alive today, and he's a treasure. We need to preserve our predecessors like that and really, treasure the time that we have with each other and with people like that, you know. But I'm here today because, and why we're here is just because we're fortunate, you know. And I don't know where I'm going with what I had shared, but I tell you, you know, that's what I believe our history is about. It's about the people. It's about addicts. And it says somewhere, and I'm not going to do a good job quoting it, but about sick and diabolical or suffering addicts that care enough about each other to help each other stay clean. You know, and that's really, for me, that's what our history is about. There's a lot of things I'm looking forward to. You know, and again, I have like regional meeting lists. I have, you know, this was our Mon Valley area meeting with Hot Pink, you know. So it's like all six of our meetings in there. This was professional. I'll have you know that a guy named Frank with, I think he had settlement money. He bought a typewriter so we could have this meeting list, you know. And then I think he wanted the money back. Like that. But, I remember another Forrest Gump moment. They were in Uniontown, and Ron and I talked. You know, the Thursday night meeting that no longer exists here was one of the very oldest meetings in the Tri-State region. You know, NA really has roots here in Uniontown, and it's so awesome that this is happening here, this event. But I sat in, I'll just tell you a part of like where we come from. You know, it was 88 or 89. They had a Laurel Highlands retreat, and it was going to be up at Jamonville. And I remember sitting at the committee meeting, which took place at St. Pete's prior to the St. Pete's meeting. And part of the discussion was, which Catholic priest are we going to get to come to the retreat to hear Fifth Steps? Wow! Like, I can't believe that now, but at the time, that was like, you know, part of the discussion. You know, that area didn't make it. For whatever reason, you know, we got to follow it. In my, you know, my area didn't make it either. You know, God always has a way of working things out for us, you know, and if it's not practical, it's not spiritual, you know. My area didn't make it better, but you know what? An area even better took root and, you know, evolved and has services and has H&I and has groups and addicts with people like these guys that are putting this thing on. You know, I learned a long time. There was a time when I was probably a few years clean and I was wearing my NA Ranger button real proudly that I thought that the fellowship couldn't survive without me. Damn if I know that's not the truth today. You know, because when I was playing drive-by recovery member, NA flourished with no help from me. You know, I went back to the regional service office that I helped remodel, and it's still there. How about that? You know, years after I had not stepped foot in there, it's still there. They're still having committees there. Start to Live convention still goes on, even though I'm not on a committee. There was a time I didn't know if they would make it without me, you know? Just being honest. That's for me what this is about, what the history is about. It's about us. It's about people. It's about addicts. And I'm just so looking forward to being here this weekend, hearing some of the people, rekindling some relationships with people. I really hope that you know, that Bo comes here. I'd love to see him and spend a little bit of time with him. Again, it's good to reacquaint myself with Jimmy, and I want to hear Vito. I just, you know, and to see Bonnie. She don't remember me probably, but I remember Bonnie. You know, Bonnie was from Butler, and Bonnie sponsored like all the women in NA in the Tri-State region at one point. Seemed like that anyway. And just so grateful to have the guys here that are part of my WE for 20-some years, John, Ron, you know, the new people I see in the back of the room, my home group, fellow home group member, Nanette, you know, it's special for me. You know, NA special, and I'm just so glad to be here and, you know, looking forward to the rest of the time we're together. So that's all I have. Thanks.